78, we began the first two psukim, and we went through the mitzudos. The mitzudos. Is this thing on? No, not yet. 1 second. Okay, now it's on. Hear me? Okay, let's begin. We're up to page 278. 278, we went through, let's review the two psukim, Kaim Hashem, Al Shlesha Pisha Yisrael. Now we're going to the three sins of Yisrael. V'alaboloi Ashivenu. There are three sins.
No.
There are three sins for which they were Hashem learned, simply means Hashem will forgive Klal Yisrael for three sins, but V'alaboloi, the fourth sin, Loi Ashivenu. Al Michram Bakesef Tzadik. The Evyon Bavur Na'aloyim. The sin of selling a tzaddik for silver. Kesef literally means a little piece of silver. And Evyon is a destitute individual. Bavur na'aloyim. I right away went to the drush, to the chazal, and told you this refers to Yosef at tzaddik, that this sin is still with us. Now before we go to the drush, which we'll come back to in one moment, let's just focus on the pshuta shel mikra. Right? It's very important never to go away from the simple translation. And according to the Mitzudos and according to Rashi, we're dealing over here with corruption. When society is corrupt, when you can't find the Bezdin that will give you an honest din, when the Bate Dinim are suspect of being of favoring the rich and famous, influential people, then you know the world is coming to an end. And that's exactly what happened over here. And that for a tzaddik, a person that's truly, truly righteous, you give the dayanim a few dollars, a few silver coins, they're willing to corrupt the judgment. In Evyoin, someone who's destitute, a homeless person, who cares? No chance, even for a pair of shoes. Now, we have to understand, a pair of shoes today costs a lot of money. Okay, shoes today is no cheap thing, but in times of Chazal, it's very interesting, understand society, shoes appear to be something that is very, very cheap. From all the different garments that you wear on your body, it appears, time of Chazal, that shoes cost less than a nice suit, a nice hat, a nice whatever, maybe even your undergarments. Shoes were something which was very, very inconsequential, very insignificant, and very, very, very affordable for even a destitute person. Today, that's not necessarily true. I mean, you can always go buy used shoes and go to a gemach and get shoes, and you can get shoes for $1.99. But today, you want to buy something new, shoes cost a nice amount of money. Go buy a decent pair of shoes. You're not going to find a decent pair of shoes less than $40, $50. Okay? And you want to buy something really good, it could run you $300, $400, $500. I mean, people pay outrageous amounts of money for shoes that they're comfortable with. But the cheapest pair of shoes can cost a lot more than a pair of pants. I think on average, go on Amazon and go find the average of a pair of pants and the average of a pair of shoes. A pair of shoes is one of the more expensive items in today's society. That's very interesting. Everything happens by Hashkacha Pratis. But in ancient times, it was not like that. Shoes was on the lowest level. And you can get more of an appreciation when they sold Yosef, which we're going to come to, when they sold Yosef to the Yishmaelim, to the whole long sequence of events of who they sold him first to. The Yishmaelim, who was the...
about if they sold
them
or not.
So who did they sell them first to?
Midonim. Well, that's Midonim. They meant to sell them to the Yishmaelim, but...
Midonim came first.
Midonim.
Okay, so the Midonim. That was Midonim?
Midonim sold it to Midonim. Sold it to the Yishmaelim.
Not Midonim. Well, Midonim, they're two different nations.
Midonim.
Two different churches. The whole Chazal, what exactly happened? But in any event... So you get a new appreciation. You see today in modern times, we hear that they sold Yosef for money. Wow, what did they buy? They bought a Borsellino hat. They bought something very, very expensive. They bought, a luxury item. They finally able to afford to go buy a very expensive pair of shoes. That's how I always understood it. When I was being grown up as a child, you learn the story. They sold Yosef. What did he do with the money? They bought these really comfortable, expensive, exclusive shoes. But that's not correct. They bought underwear. That's really what it means. They bought something which was very, very cheap. Because shoes in ancient times did not cost very much. That's how it was. And it gives an entirely different interpretation of what did they do with the money. They bought something, they just bought a new...
Sandal, probably.
right, whatever it was. Yeah. It was something very insignificant that completely changes the pshat, the outlook, understanding of what happened in the story of Mechiras Yosef. Now, they're obviously very deep ideas, shoes, make a bracha, she'asli called tzarki. Okay, we'll get to all that. But let's not forget about the pshutoi shel nigra. Shoes here, it says in Evyon. In Evyon, no one could care less. There is no one that's going to defend the Evyon. And a judge, if this Evyon comes to court and he has a case and he wants to take someone to a din Torah, it's so easy to bribe, to persuade the judge to issue the decision in the favor of the rich man, even for giving the judge Evyon. You give him, like today, you would give him something that costs 99 cents, even that would be enough. And what is the example the Pasuk uses to explain that you can influence and sway a judge for 99 cents? Naloyim, shoes. Okay, that's something to keep in mind. It's a whole new pshat, a whole new appreciation of society, ancient times. It's not like it is today. Now, we went to the Mitzudos, we went to the Rashi, did we go to the Rashi? I'm not sure if we did the Rashi. Let's do the Rashi. I don't think we did the Rashi. Pasuk Vav. Al nichram ba kesef tzadik hadayonim hayumeichim es misha yezakai badin the dayonim Rabbi Shol Zev hadayonim hayumeichim es misha hayezakai badin the kesef sheichad the dayonim would sell someone that was innocent badin ba kesef sheichad ba kesef silver. So someone's a real tzadik, it's so obvious. You have to at least go pay. You have to at least. The shechet has to at least be a couple of coins of silver. So you mekal biyad bal dinai. I'm sorry. Even you have to give a few coins of silver in order to succeed, to persuade the judges. But the evyoin and evyoin bavur na loyim tirgim yonasan b'shnei mekaymos b'dil diyach sinun, in order to prevail. Yacha it means strength. Yach sinun means inheritance. Something different translations for the word. Yachsun, the Oimer Ani, what does that mean? Shekach Perushoi, Matin Mishpat Evyon Kdesh Sheyitztorech Vesi. He's saying of it, he means Yerusha. No, there's the pasuk, let me just give you the context of the pasuk of Yerusha, of V'hoya Emunas Itecha Choysen Yeshua. How does it go? V'hoya Emunas Itecha Choysen Yeshuois Chochmas Vodas. This is the pasuk which Chazal interpret in reference to the six Siddurim of Mishnayis of Shas, the Seder Zeroim, Seder Moyed, Seder Noshim, Seder Nizokin, Seder Kachim, and Seder Taharas. V'hoya Emunas. What's Emunas referred to? Seder Zeroim. Itecha, your times. Your times refers to Seder Moed. Choisen means inheritance. And what does that refer to in this pasuk in Mishlei? Noshim. Rashi on there, the Gemara explains why does inheritance mean noshim? Because if a person has a wife, he'll have a child. If he'll have a child, he'll have someone to whom he can bequeath his assets. So when the pasuk says choisen, which translates as Yerusha, inheritance, it refers to Seder Noshim, the Mishnayis of Seder Noshim. And then when it says Yeshua's salvation, that Seder Nizokin. Why is Seder Nizokin called salvation? A person has to learn to protect himself from causing someone harm. The ultimate Yeshua is not to be spared from harm. By knowing the laws, you'll spare yourself from causing other people harm and being a victim of harm. Chochma refers to Kachim, and Das refers to Tahiris. Okay, we're not going into all the details, but all I want to focus on is the word Choysen. Choysen means inheritance. Targum of the Years is a fascinating idea, and that is that a person would come to court, and the judge would own two homes. Let's make we put it in modern terms, in 21st century, you're living, let's say, on 23rd Street, and you own two homes. Only problem is, in between home number one, home number two, there's someone else's property. And you say to yourself, oh, if only I could own the home in the middle. That way I can have a lot. Three homes connected one to the other. And who comes to court? Guess what? The person that came to the Din Torah is the person who owns the property in between your two lots. So what does the judge say? If I will issue a decision against this individual, he's going to have to sell his house because he's going to need to pay off the debt. There's a din Torah. The person who, the defendant, is the individual who happens to own the property in between my two different lots, my properties. And now look at this. If I will, he's being sued for $1 million, and if I will issue a verdict that he is guilty and he has to pay $1 million, I know the only way he'll be able to pay $1 million is by selling, putting his home up for sale. And who's going to buy it? Me, the judge. Because, and I have to sell it at a discount also because he's desperate. He needs to pay off the debt right away. So I, the judge, was nogeya b'davar. The judge should recuse himself from this court case because if the decision would be that he's guilty, he'll put his property up for sale, and the one who's going to want to buy it, in fact, he'll be entitled to buy it, dina de bar metzra. Dina de bar metzra is who has, when someone puts up a property for sale, who has the first rights to acquire the property? The neighbor, the bar metzra. So the judge here is corrupt. Really, the person is innocent. He doesn't owe any money at all. But the judge is so corrupt, he says, you're guilty. You owe someone a lot of money. And the only way he's going to be able to pay the money is putting his home up for sale. And then the judge will use the law to his advantage. Dina de bar metzra, I'm the neighbor. I'm going to acquire your property. And now I will own three assets, three pieces of property next to each other. This is how the Targum here learns pshat, pshuto shel mikra in this pasuk. Targum, let's see the Rashi, bedil diach sinun, v'oimer ani shekach b'rushon matin mishpat v'evyoin, he corrupts the law of the poor man, kidei sheyitztarech limkar sodeyu. The poor man now needs to sell his field, shehoyeloi bein sedois hadayon, the field that he's going to sell is in between the two fields of the dayon, v'ze oikeif olav. Oikev means he, I don't know an exact translation, he comes upon him with, I don't really know what it means, but oikev. Oikev olav, he prevails upon him, v'notla bedamim kalim, and he seeks an opportunity, that's what it means. Okay, it's a hard word, you have to find what the makor for that is. He seeks an opportunity, he takes advantage of the opportunity, by v'noyla b'damim kalim, and since it's an emergency to pay off the debt, he sells the asset for a price below the market value, k'de ligdar v'linol kol sedois of yachat, so that the dayon will now be able to lock in on all of the property, he'll have a monopoly, he'll own now the entire block, he'll own all the assets together, v'lo yavsik ze b'nehem, and this asset, this piece of property will not be a hefsik in between his other pieces of property. Period. Nusuch acher meisif. From the other version of Rashi, it says, Moichrim l'ani mecher gamu cholut b'chalivim. The poor man has to sell a complete sale, cholut b'chalipin, k'moy sholaf ishnal. In other words, how do you make the transaction? The transaction is chalipin. There are many ways. You can buy property, real estate, maker hadin, with three techniques: kesef, shtar, and chazaka. There are three ways to take ownership legally of a piece of property. Either you pay money, or you write a deed, or you make a chazaka. You actually do something to the property. You dig on the property. You level out any mounds, or you fill ditches, or you make an improvement to the land, even if you've not given one penny for the property. The money that you will own is what's called zokvoy olav b'milveh. It's a loan. Right now, at least legally on the books, I want to have ownership, so I will do something to acquire it, and then the money that I owe will be paid off over a period of time. There's a fourth method, which is even better, and that's called chalipin. Chalipin is where we all sing. You go to a wedding, that's really chalipin, similar, where you basically, you pick up b'chiras chametz, that's just like a kinyan to show them, I'm appointing you as my agent. You do a ma'isach, it's a minog. This is not something which is rooted in the Torah. it is customary. It's a minhag that people have accepted upon themselves that once you pick up a utensil that belongs to the other party, or he picks up a utensil that belongs to you, in exchange for him or you picking up this item, the other person is mishabed. He binds himself to conclude the deal. The deal is complete. So this is a minhag. It's even recorded in Rus. In Rus, Zos hatu'udo b'Yisrael, that the minhag was v'shalaf ish na'aloi v'nosan l're'eyu. A person would take off his shoe, v'nosan l're'eyu. Some of the Mepharshim, in fact, learned that the word na'al does, in that context, does not mean shoe. It means your glove. What is a na'al? Something which covers, we translate na'al, something which covers your feet. But the truth is, na'al may really indeed mean something which covers your hand also. The shalaf, ish na'alai, you take off your glove. In ancient times, people wore gloves. Take off your glove, I give my glove to you. In exchange for me giving my glove to you, you are mishabed yourself. You bind yourself to go through with the transaction. And that's what you see when you go to a wedding. The chasan is mishabed himself to fulfill what it says in the ksuba. The ksuba says, I will support you. I will get a job, and I will support you. I will honor you. I will give kavod. And in the case of death or divorce, my assets are meshubit to you first to pay your living expenses, to live comfortably for 1 year. By taking off, by picking up the sudur, he is meshabit himself to all of the things that's written in the ksuba. Fine. Of course you can do that. You never saw a b'chassan. The day after he gets married, he goes to work. You never saw. Of course he does. But that's part of the actual marriage. That's the marriage. Does the kala do? Does the kala sign on the ksuba? Which is ridiculous. The kala does not sign the ksuba. The ksuba is a one-way document. Chosan's obligations towards the kala. There is absolutely nothing in the ksuba that obligates that is required of the kala. Ksuba is one way, a big one-way sign. The chassan has obligations to his wife. The tnoyim is a two-way document. There are things that he has to do, and there are things that she has to do. So if you ever see by a wedding, they're going and they're bringing the tnoyim to the kala to sign, to make a kinyan, that's the tnoyim. Because in the tnoyim, it's a two-way process. And the tnoyim only lasts for how long? The tnoyim is active from the time they sign the tnoyim until they walk down to the chuppah. That's it. It's a document which lasts for how long? Guinness Book of World Records, the shortest contract. It depends how long it takes to get down the chuppah. But,
actually, it depends when you write the tnoyim.
Right. It used to be they write the tnoyim when you get engaged. You really, because the Torah basically means that you're not going to back out. We commit ourselves to getting married. There's no backing out. And each one has obligations. What they have to do to prepare for the wedding, to prepare to set up a bayis. Today, in the Litvish Olam, they shy away from doing tenoyim, going on a tangent now, because unfortunately it's not so uncommon for there to be a broken engagement. And if there's a broken engagement when you sign the deed that you will get married, you are in trouble. They say that it's better if a person wants to break an engagement. There's no way. To break a marriage, the Torah gave us a technique, Rahman al-Islam called a get. But there's no technique that Chazal have given us to break an engagement. When a person is engaged, it's better he should get married and get a divorce. Then break the engagement.
There are some chassidim that when they make tnoyim at the time of engagement.
Right.
And if they do want to break it, in many cases they will get married and make it.
Right. That's what it says. That's what it says. So the Ashkenazim don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. So therefore we don't do it altogether. We don't do it. That's why it became the meaning the last 100 years. You don't do tnoyim altogether. Oh, how can you not do tenoyim? It's minag Yisrael. When we mevatel a minag Yisrael, do tenoyim. Okay, we'll do it 5 minutes before we get married. If everyone's already dressed, if the chassan is dressed in his tuxedo and his top hat, and the kala already has her gown on, mistaver, they'll go through with it.
That's why it's so dangerous. Chassidim do it at the bar.
hard.
Right, it is very. That's exactly what you just said. That's why you just said. That's why Hasidim.
Get married.
I don't think they're going to get married today. Not, you don't. What? Not, I don't think many. Many. I don't think many. It's not. It's many. I won't say many. Whatever, but by the Litvish oil, they don't do it. Okay, I was once someone that I know very well. Okay, you can't get better than this. So they got engaged, and they asked the chassan, do you want to sign Tanoim they're a very Haredi family, traditional, very traditional. Do you want to sign the Tanoim by the Vart? So the chassan said, the only reason why you shouldn't sign the Tanoim by the Vart is because you have sveikos. Deep down in your mind, subconsciously, who knows, it's 3-4 months to the wedding, maybe longer. Who knows, maybe in 3-4 months, it'll fall apart, and it'll be a nightmare if you sign the Tanayim. The chassan said, I have no sveikos. I want to marry her. So 21-year-old boy, I have no sveikos. I'm willing to sign the Tanayim right now. Wow. So I remember my mother, Allah Hashem, she says, wow, a girl cannot feel better than that. Chassan says something like that. I have no sveikos. I'm willing to sign the Tanayim. That's serious stuff. Okay. No, they actually weren't. They actually, the Kala, I know, dirt poor. Manish, we're talking over here. Destitute.
3 weeks.
Destitute, you know? I don't know how they, Baruch Hashem, they're doing Baruch Hashem, as far as I'm doing very well. I don't know how they have Parnosa, but the Chasm also does.
I was thinking maybe the Makom to say that it's maybe a glove. That's why it says in the
Kumbh,
Shal
Nolecha,
Me'al Raglecha. Why would it have to say Me'al Raglecha?
Me'al Raglecha. Just think of now. Shal
Nolecha.
So why did the Bedavki here say Me'al Raglecha? Because there's another now. There's another now. There are the five fingers and the five toes. There's a now which covers these digits. So therefore, Stam now can really be referring to a glove. And he quotes the pasuk over here. So therefore, because we know we go to a wedding. So when you do chalipin, what do? You give a handkerchief, right? Chalipin typically today is done with a handkerchief.
Yeah.
So, but that's not what it says in the pasuk. The bukar for the chalipin is what it says in the Ruach, where it says v'zois lefonim bi Yisrael al hagulah v'al atzmura lekayim kol davar sholaf ish na'alo me'al ragloi v'nosan lireyehu. This is the meaning of chalipin. How you do chalipin? Isn't that bizarre? You go to a wedding, a guy's going to take off, you should go to the rabbi, Rabbi, I want to appoint you to be my agent to sell my chametz. Rabbi, I want you to accept upon yourself this shibud, to be my agent. And the guy takes off his shoe and he gives it to the rabbi. Or the rabbi takes off his shoe and gives it to the balabas. Did you ever see something like that in your life? Never. It's like it's bizarre, but that's what it says in the pasuk. It says the v'sholaf. It doesn't say rabbi. I didn't say me'al ragloi. It says v'sholaf ish naloi v'nosan. It doesn't say even ragloi. It says v'sholaf ish naloi. That doesn't say me'al ragloi. V'nosan l'reyeu. What? Chalipin? Take off your shoes? No. What does the rabbi do today when mechiras chametz? You take out a handkerchief. Most of them have a handkerchief.
A lot of them.
A pen. Use a pen. Shah. So what's going on? The answer is naloi in Rus does not mean your shoe. It means a glove. They wore gloves. V'zois lefonim v'zalagul v'yatul l'kaim v'sholaf ish naloi v'nosan l'reyehu. It does not say in Rus you take off your shoes. You take off your gloves. A glove today is like a handkerchief in a certain sense. Okay, going back to the Bible here. So here he ties over here. That's what he means. Okay.
To bind up.
Which is done by the
laces of the sandals.
Maybe it means to keep the digits together.
Why?
To lock in. You have your toes, they're loose, you want to lock them up. You have your digits, your fingers, you want to lock them. I don't know. I really don't know. But this is not mine. This is what it says, they want to reshine them. One of the Rishonim says their pshuto shel mikra nal means either a glove or a shoe. It depends on the context of what it means. Usually, 99% of the time, the word nal is the context of Tanakh means a shoe. But in Rus, it means a glove. and it makes a lot of sense. But over here, it says that he's quoting that pasuk of Rachem.
You have
Milas
Delos also. You have, the word is.
It can be used in different ways. The word Ni'ila. Okay, let's go further. So if the Rachem Rechem Ha'ani Mecha Gamu Cholot B'Chalipin Kamar Sholaf Yishnalai V'Ha'ainu Dimitargaminan B'Dil Diyach Sinun. Mechira linchol. The word yachson means inheritance, like we said before. Mechira linchol lahanchil is a sale that's complete. He's giving us a very, very important, very fascinating translation. Why is the word yachsinun mean inheritance? So he explains it's a mechira linchol to sell. Ulahanchil, linchol lahanchil means to bequeath, to inherit and to bequeath. From the receiver, it's inheritance. From the giver, it's to bequeath. Ulahanchil. V'lo hayu moichinoi soy kidinoi l'sheishonim. And it was not done the normal way to sell something only for 6 years. The Shemitah's Kisa, there was a minog when it comes to property, Shemitah. The land only goes back at time of Yovel. I'm not clear what this means exactly. The only time you have Shemitah is Shemitas Kisofim. Loans are canceled for 6 years. Property returns back to its owner Yovel every 50 years. Rashi here is saying something which I don't know what it means. There was a custom that when you would sell something, people did not want to sell their valuable assets that they had from their ancestors, things which had sentimental value, for more than 6 years. There was some type of arrangement, some type of minhag. Here, the corruption was so great, they were using here the word, the Targum was using the word yachsinun, is that they would take things away from poor people forever. When a person was in a situation where they had to give up of something which was very sentimental, valuable to him, the arrangement was normally for 6 years. There was such an arrangement made. Here, the Targum, according to the way Rashi learned Pshat of the Targum chose a very powerful word. Targum chose the word Yachsinun. Yachsinun literally means inheritance. Inheritance means the one who from whom you have received it is dead. He's not coming back to take it from you after a period of time. It's gone forever. The corruption was so deep when they would seize assets illegally from a victim, from a person, they wouldn't just take it away for a short period of time with a clause in the contract that you can buy it back or there will be an arrangement where you'll get it back after a certain period of time. They took it away from the victim forever. Why? Because no one's going to come and defend this victim, even though normally the custom was to protect people and not take things away from them forever. Not in this case. So this is the maskan. We have two perushim here in what it means, yachsinun. Okay, again, the words we're focusing on over here is bavur na'aloyim. The Targum is unique. The Targum says, dezabinu b'kaspa zakoyin. They would purchase. Look at the Targum. The Targum says there are four sins. Number one is there are three sins that Hashem is going to forgive. Four he will not. Let's read the whole Targum inside. Pasuk Vav and Targum Yonason. Kidnan, as follows. Omar Hashem, so says, the word Kidnan means so-ko. So says Hashem, Al Telosa Choyve Yisrael. There are three Choyve, there are three acts of guilt that the Jewish people have committed, which have to be dealt with. And seemingly, Targum is not saying the Hashem will forgive them, but the Al Arba'o Loy Eshpoik Lohoin. On the fourth sin, Hashem says, I will not forgive. What is the fourth sin? Al Dizadinu Bekaspa Zakoin. They sold with silver the innocent. He's just translating the words literally. He's not embellishing these words with any interpretation. The only interpretation that we have is what we read in the Mitzvot and Rashi is corruption. A person is a tzaddik, and he's being taken to court illegally, and the judge will issue a verdict against him because the plaintiff has passed under the table a few silver coins to influence the thing of the judge. This all these things is not giving any more deep interpretation. But the next expression he's coming to say something which is a little bit strange. Vachashichaya. Vachashichaya is the translation of an evyoin. It's a very interesting translation, because the word chashichaya means dark, choshech.
Yeah.
Choshech, which is in and of itself is a very, very illuminating, pun intended, illuminating understanding of what it means to be in Evyon, darkness. A person can be poor.
A dark situation.
As in dark, but his whole life, when it's dark, you don't see any hope. A person who's poor, there's always another day. The sun will shine, maybe tomorrow my fortune will change.
Get a job.
Right now I have nothing. But who knows what the future is? An Evyon is someone who lives in a world of darkness. There's nothing, there's no hope. That's a very powerful idea. That's really what Purim was all about. There's a lot of discussion. Why on Purim is the mitzvah matonos lo Evyonim? Why not matonos lo aniyim? And that opens up the discussion, what is exactly the difference between an Ani and an Evyon? And the simple interpretation is, an Ani is a person who at least has some dignity, who is poor. I don't have what to eat, but no one knows. No one knows. I live in a basement somewhere, and no one knows how desperate I come to shul. I look like everyone else. No one really knows, so I have at least a little dignity. An Evyon is the guy in the street. He lost all of his dignity. He is tohev lako. That is the simple interpretation. Targum of you is giving this new interpretation, a whole new understanding. You can have a guy in shul that's dressed in a $10,000 suit, and he looks fine and good, but he's depressed. He, in his mind, it's choshech, it's dark. I don't see for myself any future. Darkness. It's a whole different taich in the meaning of an evyon, and that's, I think, something we can take out of at least this one word here in the middle of almost. This word, v'chashichaya bedil diyachsin. And here's where the Targum says this incredible chiddush called yachsinun. Yachsinun means to inherit. What does it mean to inherit? And he has given us two fascinating perushim. The judge is so corrupt, he's going to pervert the law against his fellow for his own advantage. The person has property that's in between his two different homes, and he's going to issue a verdict that he's guilty, so that the person will have to liquidate his assets and sell his home at a very cheap rate. And who's going to buy it? The judge himself. And I'm embellishing this with the halacha. It's the din. It's the halacha. Din de bar mitzvah. And Rashi's second interpretation is the yachs nun means you don't just take, you issue an illegal judgment against the person. You do it with viciousness. Normally, when a person has to sell his assets, the custom was, you give him a chance only for 6 years. Like avodim, slaves, maybe it comes from that halacha in the Torah, that if you sell a person as a slave, he only can be a slave for 6 years. After 6 years, you have to let him go free. That halacha has nothing to do with Shemitah. Nothing. 6 years you're a slave, and in the seventh year you go free. Even if you go through Shemitah, it's one Shemitah, Chizkuni. Chizkuni says it means Shemitah, but no one says that. That's a very big Chiddush. 6 years, so maybe as an outgrowth of that halacha, when you sell your assets, there's a clause, the minig was to buy it back. But when you do it with chalipin, he's saying over here, cholut, the mecher gomor cholut the chalipin. An absolute sale, where there's no chance of getting back your assets. Final sale. This was the corruption. This was how they corrupted the poor people. Okay, so we have the Mitzudos, we have Rashi. Let's look at the Radak. Radak Pasuk Vav Koyemer Hashem. Now we're going to start getting this. Get to some. We'll get along a little. Come some of the very fascinating midrashim. So we start with the Abshat, and there's also a very, very, very fascinating Abarbanel. Really, we should read the Abarbanel inside, where he connects all of the six nations. The six nations, the class. I'll just tell you to outside the gist of it, because it puts everything in very, very nice. The context is just fascinating. The big mystery, we all wonder, is why did Amos begin by giving Musar to the six nations? We're all wrapped up in ourselves. We think that the whole Tanakh focuses only on Klal Yisrael, which it does, absolutely. And here the Nevi'im, they surprise us sometimes, they're giving Musar to the nations of the world. Who cares, right? So obviously that's a terrible thing to say. It's not so. The Nevi'im their role is not just for us. They were prophets for the world. This what to teach the Ummah Yisraelim also have a chelek in a chelek in serving Hashem, and it's very important. There are sheva mitzvahs b'nei noyach. They have prophets. They had Bilam. Here they have Jewish prophets giving them messages, teaching them how to behave in a dignified, moral way on their level. That's the basic understanding, which is a very fundamental principle, that the goyim also have obligations how to conduct themselves among themselves. Forget about us. Okay, and certainly when it comes to causing us harm. However, the Rabbi Abinel is very fast. He says, we first enumerate, it's an amazing pedagogical technique that Amos is employing to shake up the Jewish people. He first, when you look at yourself, we all know we're no Gei B'Davar. We're all no Gei B'Davar. When someone criticizes us, we right away defend. You don't understand. You really don't know what's going on. You see one thing. If you only knew the real story behind the scenes, you wouldn't dare give me Musar. You have a lot of Musar to give yourself before you criticize me. But if you criticize someone else, if you see a person criticizing Reuven, is criticizing Shimon, yeah, that's right. You cheer him on. Give it to him. Give him to him over the head. It's exactly what Amos is doing. He's first cursing out Edom and Tsar and Azah, Amon, Moav, all these nations. And we're, yeah, that's right. Give it to them. Give it to them. They did this. When we were refugees, they didn't want to take us in. They provoked us. They tortured us. They did this. They did that. And then Amos says, Klal Yisrael, you fully appreciate the Musar I've given these nations. Because I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to them. Guess what? I was really talking to you. You are guilty of all of these things. And the reason why I first addressed the nations is in order to open up your mind to see the chait. These sins that they have done, you did. Not when someone was a refugee, you didn't take him in. Who was the refugee you didn't take in? Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef was begging you, save me. You put me in the pit. There are scorpions. Let me escape. Help me. Take me out of here. You wanted it. No, no. You stay in the pit. And likewise, all the after we have to go through the words of the Abarbanel. All of the chatoim that Amos accuses the Ummah Yisraelim, he now turns his finger and says, who am I really talking about? You, Klal Yisrael. The Arboh lo yashivenu is not going on your fourth sin. The Arboh means the fourth sin that Hashem did not forgive each one of those six nations. That same fourth sin is what's found in you. And if I would have started and pointed my finger at you in the very beginning, you would right away go on the defense and say, no, Amos, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know. You wouldn't even open up your mind to pay attention to what he's speaking about. But because he's not focusing on us directly, but on someone else, yeah, our minds are wide open to hear the Musar. And then when he turns the tables, it's you. We're shocked. You're right. Ato ho'ish. The Arba is the fourth sin of the other nations. I'm now going to focus the finger on you. It's a very powerful idea. Barbanel is, wow. Mama, he's really on the mark here. Okay, unfortunately, it's one of the very unfortunate things with art school. I really, chaval, they didn't get the copyright. Or the space.
Too lengthy.
So they can fit it in. Leave it to them. Another 20 pages. Another 20 pages. Chaval, Barbanel would have been so geschmack to have you on the page. It's not so big, Barbanel on the Levim.
No, I'm not Levim, not so, but still he gets...
Yeah, he's very marach. I guess there's a limit to how much you can actually do here. All right.
He spends a lot of time debunking other...
Other Farshim. All right, whatever it is, but he...
We have you?
Okay. Koyamar Hashem. Let's see what the Radak says. Koy Omar Hashem al Nichram Bakesef Tzadik. Omar. Okay, so he goes through some of the basic stuff first, like Lola Bafarsh. Here we go. Let's try to see his words. Omar. This is a very important section of Nach. This is really this message in Omos is the most important message of Omos. And that's why Tzav Torah. Parsh Vayeshev, the parsha of Golus. I mean, this is the story. This is the story of Golus, the Makar of Golus, and this is a very, very critical chelik of Nevi Machwainim. Omar, Af al pisha avu al shleish aves chamurus. Even though the Jewish people have violated the three averos, which are the heim or the zorig gilavais shichas, of the zorig gilavais shichas tavim, loy nischatem gzardinim lefonai lahachiv artzim lahagloisam al yidei melech Ashur ela hachamos. The Gezeirah is only for violence, corruption, exactly like when it comes to the Mabul, Lechem Parsha, right? Kates kol bosor bo lefonai, ki hishchitz kol bosor darkoi al haaretz. All flesh is corrupt. Hishchitz kol bosor, arayos. But yet, what does it say at the end of the pasuk? Ki molo haaretz chomos mitnehem. And Rashi there says, even though the world was corrupt, le'nechtam gizardinam ela al hagazal. Like I always like to say, open up the Flappers Jewish Journal. What are the problems in today's society? Internet. Snius. Talking during davening. Give me some more examples. What? You're warned, you're all drinking Yayin Nesach because the scotch is all no right. You go to the pages of the Flappers Jewish Journal, we have all the problems of the whole world. And ki hishchis kol basar darkoi al aretz. You go through all the advertisements, shreif meat, you name it, you go through ki hishchis kol basar, the ganze Welt is corrupt, all the problems. Ki hishchis kol basar darkoi al aretz. Hashem reads the Flappers Jewish Journal, you know what Hashem says? It's not the internet, it's not snios, it's not Yayin Nesach, it's not talking during davening, it's not the Shabbos refrigerators and the Shabbos clocks. There's something missing in the Flappers Jewish Journal. Kimola Chomos Libnehem, you cheat on your taxes. The world is going to be destroyed because you're not honest. You walk into the store and they say to you, if you pay cash, no tax. It's Chil Hashem. If you can't afford to pay the tax, then you shouldn't buy the product. Not because of anything I said above. Not all of those things are problems, but that's not going to take down the world. The world's going to be taken down because you cheat on your taxes, you steal from your friends. Chazal and Farshim say, if you want to see where a person's Yoreh Shemayim, you want to see your own Yoreh Shemayim, how do you deal with money? How do you deal with someone else's money? That speaks, says it all. That is everything. Everything else is a solution for. But not when it comes to dealing with someone else's money. And it's exactly what it says over here. Nochamal, the Zil Bazak, Mamashin and Yom, Yom
Chol. Yeah, I mean, by Gezel, it doesn't simply mean illegal theft, but I think it means...
corruption.
It means legalized theft.
And it's even worse.
By doing that is by corrupting the institution of justice, whether it's our own or among the Goyim, that is what leads to the destruction of the world.
So then start again. V'hu harivi, okay, it's the third line in Pasuk Vav, page 27, V'hu harivi, it's the fourth, V'olav ha'nisham al kol ma'asha, and because of the sin, that is why they're going to be punished. V'chein der ha'mabel, likewise, in the Ramah, we just don't alpi shayu b'yodim kam averos lehenisham ella ella chomos shenemar ki molaretz chomos b'nehem. And Rashi says lenechdam gzardinam ella al hagozel. They legalize corruption. It becomes the way of the way of the world. The only way you can do business is by being corrupt. They should have established righteousness as a virtue. A person who is righteous in his din, the salef devrait tzadikim and shmos, to pervert the words of the tzadikim, v'gam heim tzadikim bedvarim achirim, ki beroiv toyane ha'emes heim tzadikim beroiv b'chol devrayim. These individuals, they are correct, they are upright people. V'chein ho'aniim beroiv lo yit'anu elo ha'emes. Poor people, generally, their claim in court is emes, and when the judges are not willing to hear their case, that is called a perversion of mishpat. Bavur na'aloyim, afilu bavur na'alayim sheyidnu la'shoifet yatidinu evyon shohoye zakar bedinai. Even something, as I told you, it's very hard for us to appreciate what this means, but in ancient times, shoes was the cheapest part of your wardrobe. Again, hard to understand this. Really, you can't be under, but that's what it was. Then the vanoisin ha'shoichat hu zakai b'mishpatehem, and by giving the shoichat, a person was zakai, by giving the shoichad, then the judge would be influenced to declare these people innocent. You know, learning, read about the Holocaust. I have all these different things about the Holocaust. One thing always comes up over and over again is that one of the most valuable commodities in the horror stories of the Holocaust are shoes. People in the camps. It's like, if you had a good pair of shoes, you were way ahead of the game. And when people would die, Rachman Litzlan, they would die, people would just die, like they wouldn't wake up one morning, what was the first thing the people would take away from him? Steal shoes. It's the horrible thing. And it comes up over and over again in all different stories.
You needed shoes to survive.
Yeah. Shoes, you need, it was freezing cold. And shoes, like Chazal, it's not for nothing. Chazal said, when a person puts on a pair of shoes, you make a bracha, she'osa li kol tzarki. And it's
dafka on the shoe.
You have shoes, you got everything. It's the most valuable asset in your life. And yet, here in the context of this pasuk we discussed in the beginning of the shiur, is it's being used in this pasuk as an item of your wardrobe that is the least significant. We come to the Evyoin, we come to the rich man, the tzaddik, a distinguished person in society, you got to give the judge a couple of silver coins under the table to persuade him to issue a corrupt judgment. But when it comes to the Evyoin, you don't need to do even that. You can give him something that is so insignificant to him. And what is the most insignificant thing that you can offer a judge? A pair of shoes. Really? A pair of shoes is so insignificant? Look at the Holocaust, Rachman al-Litzlan. It was the most significant thing you can give, even more significant than a piece of bread. Haloi davar, as Hashem was, is it a Musra Haskil, that what you thought was so insignificant is like part of the toichacha, part of the ultimate toichacha. What you thought was so insignificant to get away with committing a crime, to take advantage of a destitute person, for now you, it's a matter of survival. It's, you almost see the extreme midah k'neged midah of the Ribbono Shel Olam in the harshest toicha in the history of our people, of what shoes meant and what it says here. And galus, shoes is nothing. It's what's nothing then is now, it was not everything for us. It's very, very frightening.
Yeah, this week's parsha, we put the answer off now.
Oh, another example. Very good. This is Parsha. When Avram said to Melech Sodom, I'm not going to take from you a penny. Same, even a shoelace. So the shoe is nothing. So the shoe, it gives you a whole new interpretation. I never understood this. I always thought shoes is very choshev. From this pasuk, you see shoes is nothing in ancient times. And then Avram now says, shoes is, I'm not going to take, if you would have said, I'm not going to take from you a pair of shoes, we would have been very satisfied, right? I'm not going to take even the shoelace of the shoes. Nothing of nothing. It gives a whole new meaning when you put the word na'aloyim in the context of this pasuk. It's the end. is the tzaddik who's the gevir. Him you need to corrupt, you need to give a couple of... And the Evian, even a nothing of shoes, even that. Very, very interesting. Let's go further. In the words over here, and end of this paragraph, al nichram ba'kesef tzaddik, u'peirush, we did this already, I'm sorry. Okay, next paragraph, bavur na'loyim. Okay, let's go to bavur na'loyim, page 279 in the Radak. It's the second, it's the paragraph in Pasuk Vav. Go down a couple of lines. For shoes, I feel bavur na'loyim sheginu la'shoifet yata dino evyon sheyizak abdina. Even for a pair of shoes, the judge is willing to pervert the judgment. V'noy sein ha'shoichat hu zakai. The one that gives the bribe, he will be zakai b'mishpateyem. V'yonisam tergim. Now he's reviewing Rashi. Bavur na'loyim, mutar shi Rashi with the targum. Bedil, so that the yachsinun, so that the judge could inherit. V'lo hevanti datoy. The Radak is saying that I never understood what the targum is trying to do here in his interpretation. That the judge, the evyoin, you'll give a pair of shoes so that the judge can inherit. What does that mean? Virash yuzal perash daitoy kain. He explains as follows: kain matim mishpat ha'evyon kidei sheitzdorech limkar sodeyu. The judge is willing. Could we explain this? The judge, there's a piece of property in between the two. There's a piece, the property that is owned by the defendant is positioned in between the two properties of the judge, and by the judge issuing a decision against the defendant will have to sell his assets, and who will be the first one to buy it? The judge! So that the judge now owns three pieces of property all next to each other. Kidei sheyitztarech limkar sadeu shahoyeloi bein sidois hadayon. V'ze oikef olof. As Michal taught us the translation, he takes advantage. Advantage of the opportunity. V'noyla b'damim kalim. He's desperate. He has to liquidate his assets. He has to sell it at a price below market value. Kidei linol. The ligdar kol sidoisa v'loyas yafsik ze b'neim. This should not be an interruption between a hefsik between his two other pieces of property. Zehu bavur na'aloyim l'shoy ni'ila. So he translates na'aloyim ni'ila, not to mean shoes. The Targum does not translate this that you give the judge a pair of shoes. No, it means the judge wants to be noyel. He wants to lock up his assets. There should not be any interruption, any break between piece of property number one and piece of property number two. He wants to lock them together. And the way you lock it together is you take over all of the competition. That's his interpretation. Now, by the way, according to that interpretation, it comes out that the word shoes does not necessarily mean an item that's worthless. It slugs up everything that I just told you. I told you this. I make it up. That's why all the partial. When you pair of shoes, it's very insignificant. But according to Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel, maybe he felt that shoes is not so insignificant. Maybe shoes, in fact, is something that is very valuable, and therefore it doesn't make sense in the context of the pasuk that we should say that for a pair of shoes, a judge is going to corrupt the judgment of an evyon. Maybe a nal is even more valuable than kesef, than a couple of coins of silver. And that's why the Targum Yonasan says now means not as far as what's value, but it's a matter of outlook. In order for the judge, in order for him to be able to lock in his assets and everything will be his, he's willing to corrupt the judgment. Okay, this again, the Rashi, is that the poor man will have to sell his assets with a kinyan chalipin. And it's just an example, an expression, which means there will never be a chance for the poor man to buy back his assets. The custom was, as we explained, when you would sell your assets, the custom was you had an option of getting it back within 6 years. This is not in the Torah. This was a custom. But the poor man, the Evyon, was forced to do something that was not natural, to sell his assets in such a way that he'll never, ever get it back. And that was done when you made chalipin. When a person used the kinyan of chalipin, the custom was, this means I'm never going to get it back. It's very fascinating, because that gives us a whole new insight into the story of Boaz and Ruth. The question was, why did Boaz and Rus, why did Boaz buy from the Goyel, from the Ploini Almoini, did he purchase the right to acquire all of the assets of a husband of a Machlin and Kilyon,
Elimelech,
and with that had the right to marry Rus? Why did he have to use the Kinyan of Chalipin? Why couldn't he do it in the more basic approach of Kesef, Shtar, or Chazaka? Why did he have to use this unusual Kinyan called Kinyan Chalipin? So the Farshim answer, Minog Yisrael. Sometimes Minog is even greater than Halacha. As Chazal say, Minog Oiker Halacha. Sometimes you have a, I'm not sure if that's the correct term.
Yeah, yeah.
Minog Yisrael at times is even more powerful, supersedes Halacha, and therefore since this was the birth of Moshiach, the birth of Moshiach would come from the union of Boaz and Rus, therefore Hashem wanted it to come about bedavka, not through Halacha, something you're going to find written in the book. It has to be done through Minhag Yisrael. And we all know that to be true. Halacha you can corrupt. Halacha you can pervert. The spirit of the law is what keeps Klal Yisrael going. The Mesorah, that's the typical answer you'll hear on Shavuos. Someone give a drasha about Chalipin. V'zois lefonin the Yisrael ala ge'ulav yalatmur lekayim kol davar. Sholaf ishnale v'nosen l're'ehu. The birth of the Melech HaMashiach comes through tradition. Tradition is not something you're going to find in Chumash. It's Mesorah. It's Mamish Torah Shebal Peh. That's a very typical approach why he used Chalipin. But the Radak here is teaching us a whole new thing, a whole new world, opening up a whole new world. And that is, the Minig war, it's also part of Minig, when there was Kesef, it's not only Radak, it's Rashi. Rashi says this. When you use the technique of Kesef, Shtar and Chazaka, there is an escape clause. That's what it says. I don't know where this comes from. I really don't know what this means. What does it mean, Sheishanim? Sheishanim is only by slaves. There's a din when you sell yourself as a slave, you're only a slave for 6 years. Now when it comes to assets, you have until Yovel. Whatever this means, it means. I don't know what it means. But there was such a thing that when you would purchase something in the traditional way of Kesef, the technique, Kesef, Shtar, Chazaka, there is an escape clause or there's an expiration where you can get back what you want. But when you chose to acquire something through the technique called Chalipin, the custom was it's forever. It's Nitzchi. When Boaz acquired the right to marry Rus, the right to be the Yoresh, he bidavka did it with Chalipin. And according to Rashi and the Radak, that means this is not something where there's a possibility there's going to be a change. Mashiach is coming, whether you like it or not. Animan be'muna shlem b'vias ha-Mashiach. This is absolute. We're not going to use the traditional Kesef Shtar Chazaka for me to be the new Yoresh to take over. We're going to use Chalipin because Chalipin has this quality that does not exist in the other transactions of it is eternal. There is no way to escape, to undo the transaction. Opens up new insight into what's happening with Rus and Boaz. Okay, so let's go back over here to finish up this. This is the Radak. Bavur Nalayim. Okay, let's go further. Let's go further. Bavur Nalayim. L'shoyim ni'ilo davracha b'chayv nasazaka shakili yistarcha enelim kar se'el b'kinyin gomor shu benal. When you use a shoe or a glove, it's forever. Sh'nemar shol v'yishnaloi v'yatoyim sh'oyimim al michram b'kesef tzadik al yeshu. Aha, okay. You're not going to read this in Yeshiva Ketana. They're not going to teach you this Radak. Okay. Those that want to say, okay, this is Shmack study, you know, it's brackets. I wonder if they have this in all of the editions. article is courageous.
So this was brought in from the censor.
Right. Article is courageous here. They're willing to put in the controversial things here.
Yeah, well, they think the Goyim won't see it.
They see it.
No,
Cardinal O'Connor, when they published when they published the stone edition of the Arshkul Chumash, someone gave him the stone edition, and the first thing he did was he opened up the parsha of Vayera, Shavu lechem poi im hachamar, and he looked at what it said in the commentary in the English, am im hachamar. Don't read it im, read as if it says am with a nation. Am hadoyme lachamar, a nation. Eliezer and Yishmael are the goyim. They're a nation that's similar to a donkey. The goyim are donkeys. So Cardinal O'Connor said, "Oh, they're still calling us donkeys in the 20th century." This was his comment, his first comment on the stone edition. And by the way, Cardinal O'Connor was Jewish.
Yeah.
Okay, his mother was Jewish. We know that as a fact. He's a Yid, so you can't have tainus on a Yid for saying that. A lot of Jews criticize art school. A lot of Jews. The Goyim don't criticize. A Goy would never criticize art school. A Jew, the Haredim, they're always looking, right? Meir Zlatowitz would say, the Goyim, they never had a problem with art school. The Jews, the Haredim, they have problems. He got every single Shas edition. Avada, he's a Yid. He was a Yid. What do you want?
Some Haredim and Gimel, they never put in there.
What? They do now. In the new edition of Oy Zohadar, I don't know, there are many editions. Art Scroll, the new Art Scroll Gemaris, the new editions, they have the Oy Zohadar Shas. The folios of the Hebrew are from the Oy Zohadar edition. Oy Zohadar already has, since they've put out their first edition, has put out multiple editions. In the newest edition of the Oy Zohadar, they've put back the whole Suvya, chunk of line in Sanhedrin about Yeshua knows in the Gemara. In the Gemara,
yeah.
So article. I don't know if the article they went. They put the first edition. When
Art Scroll was told that when they do it, they should leave out all the chesronos.
All the chesronos. Okay.
They had
okay. All right. Okay. 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 No controversy. All right. Well, let's read this. The Atoyim Zayrim Al Nicher Makesef Tzadik Al Yeshu. Okay, so I don't know Christian theology. Does anyone know what this is about? I don't know Christian theology. That Yeshu was sold for shoes?
Yeah, they said that Judas gave Moses for 20 pieces of silver. Yeah.
At what point in time was that?
At the time when he was taken, were killed. So they supposedly 33 common era.
Okay, so whatever, but when they killed him, when did they kill him then?
He betrayed him, Judas betrayed him, that they came in, the Romans came and took him for the 30 pieces of silver.
The Jews bought...
He gave him the money.
All right, so let's see. Okay, so let's hear on both sides. So they want to translate this as a historical prophecy of Yeshu. That's what they want to say. So the Radak says they are mistaken. Tishivim, the answer is, Ki ein ha-parsha el al ha-maisim ha-rom sh'ha-yu oisim b'chol yoyim. This pasuk, Pshuto Shel Mikra, cannot refer to, he's coming to refute, Da'mal l'hoshef. This is a sin that is occurring continuously. Maisim b'chol yoyim. We're not coming over here to focus on a one-time event. Also, it also tells why this cannot be referring to Yosef HaTzadik, the Medrash. So here the Radak is saying, don't go tell me that this refers to Yeshu, because over here we're discussing over here corruption that is taking place daily. If you're telling me this refers to an event that happened one time, that's not what the Pasuk is discussing. Look at the context. The context of the parsha we're going to go through the next psukim, and the next couple until the end of the perek deals with sins that are taking place continuously. Don't focus on one single event. So you are corrupt in telling me that we're referring to Yeshu in this specific event. Further, the oig lama amar oisai bepeshe Yisrael hayuloy loyma bepeshe Yehuda shehim micharu ledivrehem. Why are we focusing on Yisrael? This is al shloisha peshe Yisrael. The ones who betrayed Yeshu are Yehuda. So it's a strike two against that interpretation. Hayuloy loyma bepeshe Yehuda shehim micharu ledivrehem. They didn't exist anymore. It was only Yehuda and Binyamin who returned from the Goyla, not Yisrael. Kihu Yehuda. Gam Hadrosh. Now, here we're going to go to this at length when we get to this. Gam Hadrosh Beforesh Oisal Mechiras Yosef. Okay, we all know that we discussed on Friday Mechiras Yosef. Yosef was sold to the Yishmaelim, to the Midonim, whoever it was, for shoes, for 20 coins of silver, which they used to purchase the Shvatim. They bought new shoes. Al Mechiras Yosef. Lo Yitochein. The Radak really is a tough one. He says also, don't go tell me this refers to taking issue with Chazal. How could the possibly pick it up Eliezer? How you talking the Radak and go and argue in the Medrash? I don't know what he's doing here. Not to mention
the story of the
Muzar
Adan.
Yeah.
Who started taking retribution for this very thing. For this
right, the Medrash. The Shalshelas HaKabbalah, right, he says. Right. Okay. We'll get there. Okay. We'll discuss out of time.
Right.
House
with shoes
right. So that's the peed of Yom Kippurim.
Yes.
So the Shalshelas HaKabbalah, he brings down a sheet that says that this whole thing was a fabrication. There's no such thing. Lohoyev lo nivra. It's not shaykh that Hashem can punish the Asara Harugi Malchus to be punished for the sins of Mechiras Yosef. And this that it's so eloquently described in the piyutim on Yom Kippurim. And on Tisha B'Av, it's not really on only Yom Kippurim, that they went up to Shemayim to ask. It was all a fabrication. It's not the Paitonim. They got a little carried away with themselves, and they made up things in order to embellish the davening.
Poetic license.
No license for that.
I call it Paitonic license.
Okay, if you say that in Yeshiva Katan, what do you say?
Paitonic
license. Okay, if you say that in Yeshiva Katana, I'll give you a frask. I'll be curious for saying such a thing. But it does, the Shalshelas HaKabbalah, he was a historian. He was a serious person. Okay, and he takes very strong issue with the piyut of Eila Eskira. How could it be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take the life of 10 tzaddikim as punishment for the Shiftei Kah, which happened 2,000 years ago? If it's true, it's not something for the Hamoina. It's not something that you put in the piyut in Yom Kippurim for the average person. This is not Yadus. It's not Yadus. Is very straightforward. Once we start going down a path of mystical things, you're going to find yourself in a very dangerous neighborhood. Okay, you have to be very, very careful when dealing with Inyone Kabbalah. We are maminim. They're in Yoni Kabbalah. But there's in Yoni Kabbalah are meant for Yechidim. It's not meant for the Hamoin Am. It's a very dangerous approach. But we're obviously that is thoroughly rejected because it's Minog Yisrael Torah. This is one of the highlights of Yom HaKippurim to read the Piyut of Eila Eskra where it explicitly says that the Mis of the Asorah Haruge Malchus was in punishment for Mechiras Yosef. Okay? And that's it. So the Shalshelas HaKabbalah has lost the battle. Okay, it's something to appreciate on a mature level. Okay, you learn in Koilo, mature level. But don't take that as the Ikar. The Ikar is, no, in Yadus, it appears, the Chazal favored, even for the Hamoin Am, there has to be an appreciation of Hechara in Yonim. Things which are very mystical, very deep. This is the Minhag Yisrael. Here the Radak takes issue with this. The Radak says, Shemafarish Oysai.
If you go that way, then you're denying your responsibility. Somebody else is responsible for your actions.
There has to be a balance. Obviously, there has to be a healthy balance. Where it is, It's very hard. A lot of hard things. A lot of hard things to swallow. But this was finished now. But those who explain that this pasuk Bavur Na'aloyim refers to Mechiras Yosef, the Radak is very sharp, very harsh. He's making a mistake. How could he say against the Medrash Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer? Shemefarish Oisal Mechiras Yosef Lo Yitochein Lefi Inyan Parsha V'Yoid Yesh Lachem Lachashim L'Devrim Ki Yehud Amar L'Mochroi U'V'Nevuas Yehuda Hoyoloi L'Zochroi. Yehuda was the one. Who was the one that said that Yosef should be sold? Who was the one? It was Yehuda. Uvenevuas Yehuda hoyuloy lezochrei. And then, therefore, if you're going to tell me that this pasuk, the Evyoin ba'avur na'aloyim, is a criticism for mechiras Yosef, why does it say al shloisha pishe Yisrael? These psukim should be al shloisha pishe Yehuda. If we are really referring to Mechiras Yosef, the Evyon Bavur Na'aloyim, we are in the wrong section. The Iker instigator of Mechiras Yosef was Yehuda. Klal Yisrael were the silent majority. They're also guilty. But the one that gets the brunt of the criticism is Yehuda. So he rejects. Let's review, let's recap. I'm calling to see a comment, we'll stop. But let's recap. The Radak is off the charts here. He's coming to tell us Christian theology. Those who use this as a reference is mistaken for two reasons. Number one, we're discussing here sins that were done every single day, daily. We're not focusing on events. Number two, if we're referring to Yeshu, this should have been part of the Nevuah of Al-Shloisha Pishe Yehuda. Furthermore, those who want to take the Medrash and say this refers to Mechiras Yosef, they're also mistaken. Because it should have been also in, just to give the second reason, in the Nevuah of Yehud, Al-Shloisha Pisha Yehud, because he was the prime perpetrator of the Avera, not the Chelik of Yisrael. Yes, Rabbi Chol?
It could be that this Judas story that we referred to earlier was a takeoff on this Medrash.
Yes.
And therefore...
Of course it is a takeoff of the Medrash.
That's why he's denying the validity of this particular Medrash.
Okay. Very, very fascinating. Okay, we'll stop here.